You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
The American League Central figures to be deep and dynamic in 2016 with the defending world champion Kansas City Royals threatening to be pushed by the Tigers, the Twins, the Indians, and the White Sox. We'll continue to see what the hot stove season has in store for all those clubs. And in the meantime, we're going to check in with all the beat writers from those clubs to see what the latest news and notes are. So thanks for tuning in. Here we go.
And, of course, the Royals coming off great success in 2015. Obviously, at this point, Jeffrey, we're not just talking about trying to do something special in 2016. We're trying to talk about a potential dynasty in the making. If you reach the World Series 3 years in a row in today's competitive environment, I'd say that's pretty special stuff by any standard.
Yeah, I mean, who does that, especially a small market team like this? But, I've talked to owner David Glass about that many times, and I think one of the things he's most proud of is this team is built to last. You know, it's not they don't spend a lot of money on free agency. They build from within and, you know, do their best to try to sign the young guys and keep the core together. So, you know, they fully expect to be competitive again and buy for a World Series championship this year and in years to come.
Well, as you said, they're not traditionally big players in free agency, and doesn't appear that's changing this winter, although obviously one of the big free agent fish is a guy from in-house. So still the possibility of re-signing Alex Gordon. I know there were reports to the contrary just before the new year, and then Gordon quickly refuted those, the report being that the Royals had no chance to sign him, quote-unquote. But obviously there is a chance. What is the latest on Alex Gordon's market? Obviously, he's tied up in this deep outfield class and not much movement there so far.
Yeah, I think some of the language got misinterpreted there. I mean, it started off with an ESPN report that said the Royals had lowballed him with an offer, 4 years, somewhere around $50 million. And then the CBS report came out a couple weeks ago that it said basically the same thing, that the Gordon camp rejected it, but it was much more theatrical in the way they presented it, saying there was no chance but under the present offer. And that got misinterpreted as no chance, which is not what the report said at all. It just said there was no chance they were going to take that offer, which we already knew because it was already rejected. So I'm not sure that report, you know, moved the chains very much. But, you know, it got the Twitter play, of course. And the way it stands right now, I mean, Alex has not ruled out the Royals. The Royals have not ruled out Alex. There probably is an offer on the table. I don't know that for, 100% sure, but he's always got that to fall back on if he wants to. I think he still is probably, shooting for somewhere for the stars, of course, five for $90 million or something like that. But you mentioned it is a deep outfield class, and so I think some other things got to get settled first, Cespedes for one, and and then we'll just see, where Alex's value fits in. But they still very much would like to see him back in a Royals uniform. Whether or not that happens, who knows? They're not going to overpay for him, that's for sure, because as a small market team, you just can't tie yourself up into those long-term contracts the way that big market teams can. That's just not the way they operate. And they've got some other in-house guys that they need to think about long-term deals, too.
There was some news during the holiday break about Omar Infante having surgery to remove bone chips from his elbow. Actually happened in November was the surgery. First we've heard of that. But the report also said that his status should be fine for spring training. But obviously Infante is a major focal point as we go into 2016 because there's a guy who underperformed. And, of course, the Royals had to go out and get Ben Zobrist, who has, of course, since signed elsewhere. So not that they have not that their entire fortunes ride on Infante getting back to form, but you sure feel a lot better about the Royals' hopes of returning to the World Series if Infante can get back to the player he once was. What's his status as we look ahead to spring training, and is there any possibility that the Royals would still look to make a move at second base, or do you think they're pretty secure with Infante?
Yeah, I think they're probably pretty secure with him. You know, they've still got $18 million more to pay him over the next 2+ years. And, they haven't forgotten what he did 2 years ago when he had a career high in RBIs with 66. And I think he had a 924 OPS in the World Series that year. And last year was obviously a disaster offensively. He actually was pretty healthy last year, and the bone chip thing's been going on for years. And, you know, that's not a 100% fix, but I think it just will get rid of some of the irritation and pain. And they still believe in him defensively, and that's, you know, the hallmark of their team is, you know, Dayton and his staff, they think defense first, and it's kind of hard for fans to, you know, wrap their arms around that. But that's how they're built. And they will suffer through some poor offensive years from some players as long as those guys can defend. And Dayton wants eight defenders out there. And Omar still is one of those guys. He turns the double play just about as good as anybody outside of Robinson Cano. And he was very stubborn offensively last year. We saw that. Teams, you know, pitched him slow inside and fast away, and he just would not make any adjustments. And I think what they're hoping from him is to really work the spring training on making those adjustments at the plate the way that Mike Moustakas did last offseason. And, you know, Moose got rid of some of his stubborn habits. And they, you know, it's kind of hard to teach an old guy like Omar a new trick. But, I mean, they would just like to make him have him make a couple adjustments, maybe move off the plate a little bit, you know, pass on the outside stuff. And just become, you know, if he hit 250, 260, which is kind of who he is, and, you know, drive in the big runs once in a while, which he did 2 years ago, they'd be certainly happy with that. And it's a contract that it's tough for small market teams to handle, but they needed to give him that fourth year to lure him here 2 years ago when there was a giant hole at second base. And really, there's nobody right now outside of Christian Colon who could fill that hole. So I would suspect they'll go into spring training with him as their second baseman. And, you know, down the road, maybe next year, Raul Mond, if he takes over at second base, and they can eat the final year of that contract. But 2016, it looks like Omar is your second baseman.
Twins, of course, were a very active slash aggressive team early in the hot stove season. They look to have a revamped lineup quite a bit with the addition of Dunghill Park, and kind of revamped defensively as well, Corey, with obviously the move Miguel Sano to the outfield. What are your it seems like so much of the Twins offseason revolves around that thought, because obviously Trevor Plouffe rated as a pretty decent trade candidate coming off a nice year at a you know, a prime corner position, but it seems like so much of the Twins planning revolves around Sano sticking in right field.
And I don't think anybody really knows how that's going to go, to be honest with you, because this is going to be new for Miguel playing a corner outfield spot, and they haven't yet definitively decided if he's going to be in right or left, and they're going to kind of wait and see how that plays out here in the coming weeks and certainly throughout spring training. But I think overall, off-season-wise, the Twins had two plans, was to address the offense, and because if you look at where the Twins ranked last year league-wise, slugging, on base percentage, they were down near the bottom in the league, in fact, near the bottom in many important categories in all of Major League Baseball. So I think the offense was a priority. I'm not saying it was priority number one, but it was certainly up there. And then priority number two, and this area has been pretty quiet so far, but I still think there's time to change this, was to improve the bullpen. What the Twins did not have last year in the bullpen was enough strikeout arms. They didn't have a ton of power in that bullpen. So I know that is a focal point for Terry Ryan and his staff to improve that. But I'm sure fans are wondering, that's all good and well. They acknowledge one of the weaknesses, but what they can do to address those weaknesses. And as we speak right now, really not much has been done.
Yeah, that's very true. And the bullpen market, of course, was it was pretty thin overall from a free agency standpoint. And once those top two or three names went off the board, it's kind of slim pickings. And we haven't seen a great deal of movement as we move into the new calendar year. Of course, a lot of time between now and spring training for that to start to take shape. But you mentioned the power. You know, it's hard to project what any major leaguer is going to do in a given season, especially a guy that we just haven't seen stateside. There's a few computer projections out there for Park, including the Zips model, which some people like to cite. Now, they have him down for 27 home runs, 26 doubles, and 84 RBIs in 2016. I think people would be pretty pleased with that, right?
Yeah, that would almost replace what Torrey Hunter did last year, kind of looking to fill that void. Who's going to be that guy that will step up? And despite Torrey turning 40, offensively he gave. And I know there are some other metrics that will point to Torrey not having this great year, despite what some of the power numbers say. But still, from a team standpoint, the Twins needed that. They needed what Torrey provided offensively. So if Park could kind of, you know, help fill that void, if not even surpass it, I think people would be ecstatic about that. But, yeah, I think you're right at the beginning point. Nobody really knows what this young man can do, what he will project to be, because of that unknown, seeing Major League pitching for the first time day in, day out. Yes, the numbers in Korea were great, but that was Korea. And so we're going to see how this young man adjusts. I'm sure there will be some bumps along the way. So if he gets off to a slow start, April, May, early June, I wouldn't be shocked. But then if he finds some consistency, some rhythm midsummer, you know, maybe that will be the catalyst to have him have a good productive season.
Well, you touched on the bullpen and that being an obvious area of need. Just kind of run through that. I mean, you got Perkins, obviously. Kevin Jepson, who they acquired last year, of course, set him up. Casey Fien, who you mentioned, Ryan Pressly. What do you think about Trevor May in 2016? Do you think he'll remain in the bullpen? He had some success there last year, obviously.
If I had to guess right now, I think he goes into camp as a starter, and then maybe we'll make an adjustment along the way. The Twins have a lot of guys battling for those five starting spots. I think that's going to be a fascinating race to see how it plays out. Yes, they have some guys, some veterans, a guy like Ricky Nolasco, for example, under contract for big dollars. But you know, I think you're at the point now, if you're the Twins, based on what you did last year, that it has to be competition-driven. It can't be financially driven. That if another guy who maybe is making less money but pitches better, performs better, then Nolasco might be the odd man out. So Trevor May, I think, has the stuff to be a starter. We saw some flashes of that. And also, he didn't pitch himself out of the rotation. He more or less just lost his spot when Irvin Santana came off his suspension. So it was like May, and I know the numbers weren't great, but Trevor was okay when Irvin came back in early July and that move made to the bullpen. But I think to the point that we brought up early, Anthony, what May did bring to that pen was power, was that he has strikeout stuff. And so that's why if I had to guess right now, and I could be wrong, but if I had to guess right now, I think May begins as a starter, but then based on competition, based on performance, and based on need, that may change in camp.
As far as the rotation goes, and there are a few spots that you can pretty much assume are cemented in. By that, I mean Irvin Santana, Phil Hughes, Kyle Gibson. But what about Tyler Duffy? We saw a very encouraging, I believe it was like a 10-start sample down the stretch last season. I'm not saying he wins the job based on that, but you think it'd at least be a nice tiebreaker if all else is equal in spring training performance. What do you think of Duffy's outlook for 2016?
I was amazed at how this young Texas kid with all the curveballs, Anthony, if you look up the numbers, the amount of curveballs he was throwing and the fact that his arm didn't fall off was amazing, that this guy was able to throw that many breaking balls, you know, during critical starts in September. He wasn't just you know, going through the motions here. They needed him to step up and perform, and boy, did he ever. So he has absolutely earned that chance to be in that conversation to win a job during spring training. So he's going to be battling with Nolasco, with a guy like Trevor May, if he's in that spot, with, I would say, Tommy Malone. And there may be a few more names to mix in there. Jose Berríos, haven't even touched on him, although I think he won't leave camp with the team. But I think Berríos will be up at some point in 2016. So I think there are some arms that they're going to have to make some tough decisions, but Tyler Duffy certainly has earned that chance to be in that mix come March.
And JB, the new year, did you make any New Year's resolutions?
You know what? No, I don't. I don't do resolutions.
Don't do resolutions. You're above that.
No, I try and wake up every day throughout the entire year with a daily resolution of what I can do to be a better person that day. And then when I don't do it, then I just do it the next day.
I mean, that's a beautiful. I got a tear in my eye thinking about your daily motivation. Are you one of those people who writes something on a chalkboard that's there when you wake up and you know, propelling you forward for that morning?
No, not usually. No, there's no chalkboard. It's just sort of you wake up and you think of something and then you don't do it, and so you push it back to the next day.
Oh, okay. Well, I think you should resolve to write this stuff down and have it on a chalkboard or a race board, something like that.
I want to know how many Bruce Springsteen concerts you have in line for 2016.
Currently two, and
that's
working
it?
On a third. Yeah, working on a third. We'll see how that develops. But definitely Pittsburgh and Cleveland. Pittsburgh is opening night of the tour, and got to go to that Cleveland show, of course. So that's
about
the plan.
The spring training date.
That's what I'm working on. That's the one that's in the hopper. So that's my resolution. But let's talk about the Indians. What's the Indians' resolution for 2016?
in your mind?
The Indians' resolution should be to produce more offense, especially in April. I think the rough starts over the last couple years, as we've talked about ad nauseum on these podcasts, kind of doomed this team under the Terry Francona era, and I think that's got to be sort of the change this year, and that's obviously going to be an uphill climb because Michael Brantley's out. So tried to take some steps by getting a guy like Rajay Davis in here to sort of help shore up that outfield, but getting off to a better start and getting that offense rolling to help support what should be one of the game's best pitching staffs. Again, I think that's got to be the goal.
Well, on that front, obviously the Indians made a move in late December after things broke down from the Todd Frazier trade standpoint. He goes to Chicago, and immediately after that is announced, the Indians, word comes out that the Indians have signed Mike Napoli to a one-year deal, $7 million. That should be made official here in this first week of the new year. What are your thoughts on Napoli? Obviously, it's a right-handed bat, and it's probably not the quote-unquote big right-handed bat so many fans clamor for. But coming off a 2015 season where he struggled in the first half and caught fire in the second after the trade to Texas, what are your thoughts on Napoli and how he fits into this offense?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot going on over the last couple of years with him health-wise between, you know, hip issues a few years ago and is well-documented the issues he had with sleep apnea and kind of the very invasive surgery to correct some of those issues. And, you know, so I think last year you could almost look at it as a year where he was trying to even sort of get a footing on himself health-wise and produce under some unique circumstances. And obviously in the second half, you know, maybe that helps the Indians believe that, you know, he kind of got used to some of those adjustments as he was gone, and maybe he's getting closer to being the type of right-handed power hitter that he was a few seasons ago. And obviously the affordability of that deal, given the circumstances, is attractive to a team like the Indians. So I like it. I mean, I can see why they did it. You know, he can help out against left-handed pitching especially, can provide some plus defense at first base, so continue this push towards Carlos Santana being more of a DH, which they obviously started shifting in that direction last year. You know, I think that's been the emphasis. I think pushing pitching and defense as the main avenues for success, I think we've seen those steps being taken over the last season. I think this just sort of continues the fall in line, and maybe it adds that right-handed bat to the middle of the lineup. Maybe you don't put as much pressure on Santana to be your cleanup hitter. You know, all those things kind of make sense for this move. So I can see why they did it. I know there's a lot of Indians fans who were disappointed they didn't get Todd Frazier, but from everything we've heard and, you know, everything we've read and all the sources we've talked to, it seemed like the Reds were pretty adamant with a pretty high asking price for Todd Frazier from the Indians, and the Indians weren't willing to go down that type of road.
I got to tell you, and it's not exactly sexy for a first baseman, but I'm probably more optimistic from a defensive standpoint with this move than the offensive one. Just, it was a clear upgrade over Santana defensively, and it fits with the overall you know, mindset and scheme of this club to protect its pitching staff, which obviously was a huge reason they were even in contention in the second half because of the improvement of defense. And now
right.
Napoli should conceivably add to that, although, boy, I mean, Santana's a 30-year-old DH. I guess, you know, my biggest question is how he just adjusts to that mentally. Obviously, his numbers, when he's been a DH, have not been as strong as when he's been in the field. You see that sometimes, but this can be quite an adjustment for him if it's more of a full-time basis.
Yeah, for sure, and I think that's something that maybe this is smart to do it in the off season, so you can go into spring training and you give him the spring to sort of come to terms with the idea that he's going to be a DH most of the time, because that is something that he has voiced a little, you know, displeasure with in recent years. You know, that kind of spawned his experiment to try and become a third baseman a few springs ago. And obviously that didn't work out, so they moved him to first, and he played pretty well at first for, you know, in stretches, but not well enough. And one thing that Terry Francona really said multiple times last year that in order to be a good first baseman, Santana really has to work hard at it. You know, it doesn't come as naturally to him as some other guys, and I don't think they were seeing the type of consistency at the position defensively that they liked. So, you know, he's tried to fight that path to being a DH for a couple of years when he went from catching to first base, third base, back to first, and now those steps have been taken. I think maybe you have prepared him now, given him enough time for him to prepare to be used to that idea and for them to sort of stress that it's his offense and his unique offensive attributes that make him a really valuable player.
Beck, what do you? First of all, I think everybody out there wants to know what you are resolving to do in 2016. Do you have any New Year's resolutions?
Not really a whole lot. I kind of resolved to not do resolutions a couple of years ago, and then now that the New Year's here, I just simply forget to do them, and I use the saying that it's too late into the year to make any as a cop-out. It seems to work pretty well.
Well, do you resolve at least to not have any surprise root canals or anything of that nature?
I'm hoping for that, although we'll see. It's when you're a runner and it's winter in the Midwest, you're always liable for a slip and fall and any other sort of, you know, something – injuries
right.
that could lead to random surgeries and visits to the doctor.
That's absolutely true. Well, speaking of unexpected surgeries, you know, Victor Martinez had his close to a year ago, and it seems like so much of this 2016 season is, I won't say dependent on him coming back to his old form, but certainly you feel a lot better about, you know, the totality of what the Tigers have done here and continuing to build around this core, you know, star group. You feel a lot better about all those things if Vic is back and healthy. What's the latest on what you're hearing about him? Because, frankly, we haven't heard much. We hear a lot about Miguel Cabrera having a normal offseason, so to speak. But what's the word on Vic?
Well, it's hard to get regular updates because, unlike some of his teammates, Victor is not an Instagram fiend and doesn't post, like, regular photos of his workouts. In fact, I don't know if he does any social media. Maybe Lil Victor does, and we just have never seen it. I have no idea. But the reports that the Tigers people say is that he's been working out normally and is feeling pretty good. Now, that said, if I remember right, the injury that he had last offseason didn't come until, like, late January, like mid to late January. So there's still a little bit of ways to go. In fact, I think it was the same way when he blew out his knee in 2012 as well. So it could be, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But all in all, all the signs right now are pointing towards him coming back healthy and being able to do everything once spring training starts, which should be huge. Now, does that mean we should expect a return to the 2014 form? I'm not quite going to say that. I don't know if we're ever going to see that type of home run power from him again. I mean, you'd love to, but you know, maybe it's possible for another year. Maybe he turns back the clock again, but I'd be surprised. I think what the Tigers are hoping to see out of him is a return to that productive bat that maybe doesn't have that same home run power, but can give you, you know, key hits and productive doubles and get you in a situation where, you know, you can get similar RBI totals. I think kind of more like what he had in 2011, where I think he was like upper single digits, maybe low teens in home runs, but still got 100 RBI. And that's what the Tigers are really counting on to fill out that offense. And that's something that they've cited when people have asked about, you know, what else can go down this offseason.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I kicked this off with discussion of Vic, because, you know, again, the way things currently stand with this lineup, you point to him as a central figure still in the middle of that order. And I know in a dream scenario, the Tigers would add another impact middle of the order bat in left field.
and lengthen that lineup all the more, and you know, kind of take away from the urgency for Vic to come back to that old form. So as far as that left field situation goes, they go into the calendar year with Cameron Maybin and Anthony Gose and Tyler Collins all, you know, pretending to have at bats in that spot. But, of course, we know, and they're saying publicly and even privately that they're not expecting to do anything else dramatic in the hot stove season. But, of course, we know that when Mr. Ilitch gets that itch or there is the right guy at the right price at the right time, they've been known to pounce. Now, we have this situation, this logjam of free agent outfielders, and you just kind of look around the landscape, and it could be more guys than teams that can comfortably afford those guys. And you can definitely see a situation where prices come down a bit. So it's a long-winded way of asking you, Beck, if you think in the next couple of weeks if we could see developments that lead to the Tigers, you know, potentially being in on one of those guys.
Everything I'm hearing is that they're not going to move quickly. And if they do anything, it's not going to be anytime soon. In fact, the way this is, they might not even do anything before spring training, whether it's left field or maybe even in the bullpen. That said, I still think you're in a nice position to maybe go after a guy on the long term or on a short term deal if guys fall through the cracks. You've got outfielders out there without teams really pursuing. I think they're in a very good position for that, and something where, they could go over into that luxury tax territory for 1 year and pay that first-timer's penalty, but avoid being one of those repeat offenders who starts paying like $1.40 for every dollar you spent, or even greater than that, depending on what the rates would be in the next CBA. So, but right now, they're showing no inclination to move quickly on anything. I know it's surprising to some people, and it's kind of, a little bit perplexing for others. But right now, they're being pretty steadfast in saying that they don't want to make another one of those big long-term deals. The next long-term deal I think they do would be for J.D. Martinez.
Merck, it's a new year, buddy. I know everybody out there in podcast land wants to know, A, how your New Year's went. Did you get wild and crazy on the streets of Chicago? And B, do you have any New Year's resolutions for 2016?
My New Year was pretty low-key. I got wild and crazy on just one street in Chicago and just for a short amount of time. So, I'm not as young as I used to be. It's got to be a little more relaxed and that kind of thing. New Year's is kind of, it's kind of like Halloween and Valentine's Day and that kind of thing. I don't want to say for the amateurs, but, you don't have to go out just because it's a certain day of the year. I'm starting this new year off with nothing but upbeat thoughts, right? I really haven't thought about resolutions. I guess since it's the 4th, I probably should come up with a few. Maybe in the next podcast, I'll have a few resolutions for you.
Well, I know you got a new TV, so you could probably resolve to figure out how to operate that. Your first new TV in 2 decades. That's a big deal, Mark.
It was the last time I bought a new TV was when Bill Clinton was the president of the United States. The TV that I had taken away had a back to it still. So that was, and no high def capability. The other TV in my bedroom was like 18 inches. So it was like one of those that you used to see in like people's kitchens. I think I actually swiped it from my parents way back when because they didn't need it anymore. So, and it still worked. God bless that TV. I forgot the maker of that brand, but it still worked and still had a good picture. I was kidding the people took it that I probably should have sold it to, like, a museum that it still existed or something. But, good new TVs, good purchase to start the new year. Good college football, basketball, and soon-to-be baseball watching on the TV.
Absolutely. Well, the White Sox have some new additions as well. They obviously resolved to be a contender in 2016, and that in itself is an interesting development because, frankly, they went into the offseason not knowing which direction they'd go. We didn't know if they'd continue to push forward after a highly disappointing 15, but to their credit, they have. A couple of impact trades for Todd Frazier and Brett Laurier in particular. But
well, as we head into the new year, obviously, Merck, this is a team still being associated with some of the top of the market free agents. Where do things stand right now as far as the White Sox next move?
Well, I think first of all, you give credit to Jerry Reinsdorf and Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams and the whole front office staff for, you know, even though they, I don't want to say they got burned last offseason, because, you know, David Robertson pitched pretty well for them. Melky Cabrera came along, you know, as the season went on. Samardzija just struggled. Zach Duke was fine out of the bullpen. But, you know, even with the spending they had offseason to kind of, you know, speed up the revamping, reshaping process, they still went after it again this year. Now, granted, with guys locked down to longer-term contracts like Cabrera and Robertson, and even, you know, $13 million owed to LaRoche, it was going to be kind of hard to go through a wholesale rebuild. But, you know, they're trying to pull off a very high degree of difficulty, and that's developing prospects, staying relatively young, being able to replenish them in their system while adding pieces to contend. Now on to what you asked about the outfielders. You know, from the beginning of the offseason, I stayed pretty consistent in writing about, you know, that the contract would have to fit what they wanted, not they weren't going to get into a bidding war for these free agents. And again, that's not like, that's not hubris, or that's not, you know, saying they know better than others. It's just the way they have structured things. And they're not going to, you know, if someone comes and says, well, you know, we have an offer on the table for Upton at 5 years, $120 million. I don't think the Sox are going to say, come back and say, okay, we'll go 6-125 or something like that. This is going to have to fit what they want to do in the course of their being. You know, you really look at it, they have a, I think they're looking at a 2 or 3 year window at tier contention. And then after that, kind of reevaluate if they don't win with that. You know, you still have the great contracts for Abreu, the great contracts for Sale, the great contract for Quintana, very solid contract for Eaton. You know, you have Frazier under control for a couple of years. So that's kind of what they're looking at right now. So I think they're in the mix, but the question is, will any of these guys come down to, not come down, but agree to that level? And, you know, as much as people are saying, well, you know, there's no offers out there, that, you know, it was a pitcher's market and the free agent outfielders aren't getting an offer. Anthony, you know as well as I do, these markets eventually set themselves. And I don't think any of these, I know for a fact, none of these high-end guys, if you look at Gordon, Cespedes, and Upton, are panicking. I don't think anyone in their camp is saying, okay, let's take a deal tomorrow because we don't know where it's going to be. These things have a way of working it out, and we'll see if it ends up working out where something fits the White Sox.
Yeah, my only skepticism with the whole three-year thing that's been reported is the free agent class 3 years from now is, a lot of people are talking about it, it looks historically deep. So, and granted, it's hard to project these kind of things and who ends up planning extensions or whatnot, but it could be a tough sell for the guys, especially on the younger end of the spectrum, to do a three-year deal now and go back into those waters in 3 years. We'll see. But the other point that must be made is just there's more outfielders than teams associated with those outfielders.
Right.
So
right.
Something's got to give. Somebody's price has got to come down, or there's got to be some surprise suitor in the mix or something. But obviously this logjam has got to clear in the next couple of weeks, you would think.
I saw Bob Nightingale on MLB Network today, and he talked about maybe one of them would take a one-year deal. And then because of the fact that you said, like, 3 years from now, the market is huge, I think
right.
The next 2 years it's not very great. So maybe
exactly.
One- or two-year deal. But, you know, the thing is about these guys is, you know, look at what happened with Jeff Samardzija. Now, granted, Jeff Samardzija may be a good and a bad example. He, you know, took a flyer on himself last year, didn't have a great year, but still got 5 years, $90 million. So I guess you can look at it both ways, that you can go for that 1 year and say, you know, I'll even build up even more and then hit, you know, really kill it next year in the market. Or you could have an off year and drop yourself a little bit. But it seems like good players are going to get the money they deserve. And I that's why I think it's, you know, as much as I respect Bob, I think it's hard to see a guy taking a 1 year deal. Maybe I'll be surprised by him. Well, I'll be surprised. But I still think these guys are going to get the deal they want. But if someone else told me, you know, you can want all you want. You can want the 6-year, $125 million deal. But if no one's offering that, you have to adjust your sights a little bit, obviously.